people convicted of domestic abuse in the U.S. are legally banned from having guns. But a new investigation has found that's not always the case, and that it can have tragic consequences for the people those laws are meant to protect. From 2017 through 2020, at least more than 100 people were killed by domestic abusers using guns they were not supposed to have. Jennifer Golan looked into this for Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting, along with Al Jazeera and The Guardian, and she joins us now. And we want to warn listeners that this conversation will include disturbing details. And Jennifer, new data from the FBI shows a 58% jump in intimate partner gun homicides over the last decade. Can you put that into context for us?
These are absolutely shocking numbers that took us by surprise as well. We found that the pandemic has been an especially lethal period for abuse victims. Gun homicides involving intimate partners rose a stunning 25% in 2020 compared with the year before. This is the highest level in almost three decades. And women accounted for more than two-thirds of these victims who were shot and killed by intimate partners last year.
Let's get into some of the stories that you uncovered. You met the family of Jasmine Willock, who lived in Tucson, Arizona. She was killed by her partner, Terrace Fort Dillard, in 2018, and he possessed a gun even though he was convicted of domestic violence. Let's listen to Willock describe to a detective why she feared that he was going to kill her. Again, this audio may be hard to hear for some listeners.
I thought he was gonna shoot me.
Okay.
He's like, I should pistol whip you. And I was like on the ground and I was saying, please stop, please stop, please stop, please. After that, he like went into the room and I ran out the back and I jumped over the fence. I just ran.
Jennifer, what happened to her after this incident?
Well, Terrace was indicted for felony assault with a deadly weapon. But when police arrested him, they found a magazine to a gun, but no gun. So this is part of the problem with our gun laws in this country, is that federal law and many state statutes prohibit offenders from having guns, but they're sporadically enforced. And police, prosecutors, and judges often do not take these guns away from offenders when they have these disqualifying convictions. In Terrace's case, he ended up being charged again for abuse several months after this incident. And then in January 2018, he shot Jasmine, his partner, and killed himself with this gun that he was not supposed to have.
Why do these lapses in the law exist? I mean, who is failing the victims here?
Well, the laws are in place, but the problem is they're not being enforced. The laws don't spell out how offenders should surrender their guns if they have a criminal conviction. So there are no surrender procedures in place, no procedures to actually go and seize those guns. So police, prosecutors, and law enforcement in general, and judges, are actually using the honor system. Basically, we're functioning on this system where offenders are trusted to disarm themselves.
Let's get to another woman's story. Ashley Rucker of Jacksonville, Florida, was allegedly killed by her boyfriend. He was a convicted felon and should not have possessed a gun. You spoke to Ashley's sister, Lisa, who was also shot by him. And Lisa told you that she thought authorities should have known that he had a gun. Let's listen.
There needs to be a better way to enforce that felons don't have access to weapons. I know it's hard. I get that. They can get it one way or another. Steal it. Buy it off the streets, whatever. So go one step ahead. I feel like a lot of government people don't see how bad of an issue it really is. They don't see the ripple effect from it.
You spoke to many other loved ones like Lisa. What else did they share with you?
It's true. There are so many families out there that have been shattered by these shootings. They told us how these tragedies have broken their families apart. In Lisa's case, her son and nephew were cowering in a bedroom nearby when their mothers were shot. They were just 9 and 4 at the time. I mean, there are so many stories like this where children are impacted for life and their survivors are broken as a result. And many of these families blame the perpetrators who were armed. But our investigation also exposes how our gun laws are only sporadically enforced in this country and how this system is letting abusers kill people with guns that they shouldn't have had in the first place.
To your point here, you also found that no federal agency tracks how many people are killed by intimate partners barred from having guns. Here's Thomas Chittum, the acting deputy director at the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, whom you asked about these figures.
Just the American system, that it's very decentralized. These convictions and domestic violence restraining orders are issued across the country in local courts. And in each of those places, they have an opportunity to identify the violations early on. Tragically, a lot of these only come to law enforcement's attention when something terrible has happened.
Jennifer, he says that it's decentralized, but now you have all of this data in front of you. You've had a chance to speak with law enforcement officials, family members. What have you come to, and what efforts are being made to change this at the federal level?
The problem is that the system is decentralized. A lot of these cases are handled by local and state courts. But at the same time, while intimate partner gun homicides are soaring, the federal government is not tracking the number of people prohibited from possessing firearms who have gone on to kill their partners. And this is really critical data to be able to make informed policy decisions. We need to have a sense of how big the problem is. In our case, our analysis found that in just 21 states, more than 100 people have died at the hands of prohibited possessors, offenders who should not have had guns because they had criminal convictions. And it's something that the federal government could address. And Congressman Eric Swalwell has reintroduced legislation, and it would develop model relinquishment procedures for states to use. But it's died in Congress already twice. He reintroduced it again earlier this year. And while it would provide these model requirements, the problem is they're not required for states to adopt. And at the federal level, it would require the Attorney General's office to adopt them for the federal government to use to the extent possible. But the problem is many of these cases are handled at the state level. And again, without requirements in place, these are just recommended procedures.
Jennifer Golan is a reporter for Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting. Jennifer, thank you so much for sharing your work with us.
Thank you very much again, Tanya, for having me.